What are your announcements?
I feel I owe a debt of gratitude to you people who have been supporting us, me especially, in the different times that I've been asked to accept teaching assignments. And I feel keenly the need of and the presence of your prayers when I'm over there. It would be scary to be involved in work like that without feeling God's blessing. And I feel that you're a very integral part of that blessing with the intercessory work that you're doing back here. I would like to begin with reading just a couple of scriptures, referring to a couple of scriptures. I remember some years ago, before we were facing a time of decision relating to our future and relating to church work, where someone was giving counsel for us about finding the Lord's will. And it wasn't just specifically to us, but it was something that I kind of enjoyed and have remembered to this day. He basically said that to find God's will, you proceed to a door. And if that door opens, you walk through it, and you go to the next door. And if that door opens, you keep walking until the doors stay shut. And I think there's something that's nice about that. In fact, I would like to refer to a couple scriptures that use the word door. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to 1 Corinthians, the last chapter, verse, maybe I'll read 8 and 9, but I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. It's like he saw an opportunity that was opening before him, and he was looking to make use of this great door and effectual. Just a page or so back in 2 Corinthians, Paul again, furthermore, when I came to Troas as to preach Christ's gospel, and a door was opened to me of the Lord. Another instance of a door opening for the Apostle Paul. And then in Revelation chapter 3, the message to the church at Sardis, and unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things saith he that hath the seven spirits of God and the seven stars, I know thy works, that thou hast a name, that thou livest, etc. And then moving down to verse 8, I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it, for thou hast a little strength, thou hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. So I would just like to challenge us, as the Lord gives us open doors, to walk through those doors and to be looking for open doors. And there's so much work to be done in Christ's kingdom. There's so many opportunities in Christ's kingdom. And as bearers of light and of the good news, we have the opportunity to go and share that light and that news in parts of the world where it's not common. How many of you have been to Africa? Okay, we got a sprinkling of you here. How many of you was that Kenya? Okay. And Paul's, were you in Liberia too? Okay, how many were in Liberia? Okay, Craig, yeah, and Paul, good. Anyone been to Nigeria? Like checking on your investments or something? No. Okay. Okay. Well, I would like to begin by just doing a little geography study about Nigeria and Liberia. These were the two countries that we visited, that I visited, both located in West Africa. Nigeria is the, where'd I put that thing, Hannah? Okay. Both in West Africa, both along the bottom edge there. Nigeria right there, and then Liberia over here, the small country over here on this side. And maybe you would leave some of the lights on yet so I can read my notes until we get into the pictures, especially up front here. give me this front light here. That's fine. There we go. Okay, Nigeria. Okay, Africa those of you that have been there, Africa's a big, what is it, a big country? Big continent, okay. It's a little bit hard to imagine how big Africa is, but you could put the United States and China and Eastern Europe and India, and Spain and France and Germany and Italy and maybe several other countries all in Africa. The thing about Nigeria, then, it is the most populous country. There's like 52 or 54 countries, something like that, in Africa. Nigeria is the most populous of all. It is a country about a tenth the size of the United States, with a population a little more than half of the United States. So there's a lot of people that are living in Nigeria. So if they're wanting to come up with scams and mischief, they have a lot of people to be working on it. Liberia, then, by contrast, is about half the size of Kansas, and it's fairly loosely populated, or relatively so. It has a population of, I think, around 4 million, maybe a time and 1.40% of what the U.S. has, or something like that. So it's relatively sparsely populated, and the size is basically about half of the state of Kansas. There's some interesting things about these developing countries, and this is not unusual. The median age, does anyone want to guess what the median age of the people might be? And I took these first facts from the CIA, the World Fact Book, online. Median age, you're guessing 30? Anyone else? You're getting closer. Looks like 17.9, basically half of the population 18 years old and below. And I think Liberia is very similar, as I recall. Lagos, the city where I landed, or there where I landed, it's a little bigger than Partridge, 10 point something million, as says here. The maternal mortality rate, 630 or 830 deaths per 100,000 live births. Lois, you would be interested in this. Life expectancy across the country, 52 years and a fraction. The fertility rate, 5.31 children born per woman. The obesity index, adult, 6.5%. We've got them beat there by quite a bit. Literacy, age 15 and over, total population about 61%. In Liberia, a lot of those figures would be similar. A median age, 17.9 years, so basically, again, half of the population below 18 years of age, or 18 and below, whatever. Maternal mortality, 770 deaths per 100,000. Infant mortality, 70 per 1,000 live births. Life expectancy, 57 years. Obesity, 4.9%. Literacy, around 60%. The USA, the density of doctors per population was also very interesting. Median age in the U.S., 37.2 years. Okay. 21 deaths per 100,000 live births, as opposed to what was it, 600-700. Infant mortality, 5.9 deaths per 1,000 live births. Life expectancy, 78 point some years, and 2.06 children born per woman. Literacy, age 15 and over, that can read and write, 99%. That's not that critical, but that gives just a little bit of a feel for what kind of dynamics we are dealing with. And again, those facts from the World Fact Book from CIA. Perhaps more important for our consideration is the spiritual dimension, or the spiritual dynamics of what we're looking at. How many of you are familiar with Operation World? is a Patrick Johnstone, tremendous resource for countries and unreached people groups and where the gospel is going out. And I got significant information from them on both Nigeria and Liberia, and I will be quoting fairly freely from that writing without identifying it all the time, just for ease of moving on. Last fall, November, was when I was in Nigeria, so I will begin with talking about Nigeria, and then I want to move to Liberia, and I want to have some comments, then go into the pictures, and hopefully we'll have time for some questions at the end. Again, Nigeria, very populous nation, a nation teeming with people. They say there's over 520 ethnic groups. The division between Muslims and Christians is around 50-50, depending on whose statistics you look at. There's a significant Muslim population in the northern part of Nigeria, which has caused a lot of conflict between them and the Christians. There's been churches burned and people killed and a lot of that. I think even while we were there, there was something in the news about a church being killed or what it was, a church being burned. Nigeria is constitutionally a secular state with freedom of religion, but the northern ruling elite give preferential treatment to Muslims and discriminate against Christians. Little has been done to stem the growth of violent Islamist groups or to stop persecution of Christians in the north, resulting in hundreds of churches burned and many Christians killed. Since 1999, Muslim state leaders have imposed Sharia law in 9 northern states and parts of 4 others. This demographic says 51 and a fraction percent Christian and 45 Muslim. There have been different answers to prayer. One is Nigeria's prayer movement is one of the world's largest. It's a very significant force. Some of the largest prayer meetings in history have been in Nigeria. There's been an estimated 3 million in Lagos at one time. Positive development, political development, and church growth can be attributed in large part to these movements. The church has grown dynamically. There's one church that they noted here, the Church of Nigeria, that went from 900,000 in 1960 to nearly 20 million in 2010. That would roughly parallel the history of Center Church, and I don't know, the percentages aren't quite equal there. Challenges for prayer, the scale of corruption, and I'm just snatching little portions out of this report. The scale of corruption in Nigeria is staggering. It is widely regarded as one of the world's most corrupt societies and is infamous for email scams, international crime, and drug running. Church growth is massive, has been massive, and remains so. Nigeria has a large majority of West Africa's evangelicals, but such growth is not without its own dangers. Pray against a failure of discipleship. Listen carefully, because this is where it can enter into what we are hoping to do over there. The emphasis on evangelism and soul winning without adequate follow-up and balanced Bible teaching, Africa's and Nigeria's greatest spiritual challenge is not Islam, not corruption, not even the need for missions, but discipleship. You can underline that in your mind if you want. If the Nigerian church were truly discipled and brought to maturity in Christ, it would be an unstoppable force. Unbalanced prosperity theology and chasing after dubious miracles cheapen the good news. Numerous doctrinal distortions, greed masquerading as biblical prosperity, spiritual charlatanism, and unethical fundraising not only exchange the truth for lies, but they also inoculate millions against the real message of the gospel. Pentecostal groups are especially prone to these excesses. There's a section on Christian leaders. There is frequently a gap between what is preached and what is perceived to be practiced by Christian leaders. Personal holiness talks about extravagant lifestyles. The multiplication of leaders who are spirit-led, well-versed in the scriptures, skilled in disciple-making, and steeped in the knowledge of God and the power of prayer. this is what we can be praying for the Nigerian church. Servant leaders and mentors, for them to be raised up. And it talks about the persecution by the Muslims in the northern part of the country. Those are some of the challenges, some of the issues that are facing Nigeria. Nigeria would also have, those of you that are studying your perspectives course, unreached people groups. And there's a lot of, there's statistics about that. I think for time I will just keep moving. One of the needs is for Nigerian authors to be raised up that will teach the sound doctrine and will teach the truth from God's word. Here it says, many mega church pastors write copiously, but the topics are the same: prosperity, success, and overcoming. Pray for those who are interested in writing on a wide range of issues and in a culturally and contextually relevant way, but lack the means and publishing resources. And I want to refer to that because we had some direct contact with that kind of thing when we were there. Bible translation, there's more than 500 different languages in the country. And there's different things that are being worked on there. Talks about Christian radio and the effect of Christian radio. Ironically, I was there on behalf of Heralds of Hope, which is a Christian radio ministry that is working, and their contacts were through the airwaves initially to get to there. I think that's going to be enough for Nigeria. Let me just talk briefly about Liberia. Liberia is a much, much smaller country, around 4 million people as opposed to 70, something like that with Nigeria. How many of you remember that Liberia was in the news 20 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago, 25 years ago, yeah. And what was the situation? I mean, if you're thinking what I am. Anarchy, but then what resulted from that, or what came out of that? There was a civil war in the 90s, and this civil war was a tremendously, tremendously painful thing. And that I don't understand it all. If I'd be going back now, it would be much with my interest there. I would have wanted to study it much better. But how many of you know how Liberia was started? Marvin. Okay. In 1847, Liberia became Black Africa's first independent state, created as a colony for freed American slaves. What tended to happen then, these Liberian Americans got the posts in government, and it created a lot of, though they were a small minority, created a lot of hard feelings and a lot of issues. Things came to a boiling point in the 90s. I think it was 90s, maybe it was even before that. The Civil War, the first round, prolonged the Civil War until 1996 and resulted in Taylor, who was an opposition force, coming to power. And then there was another uprising and some more Civil War after the turn of the century. The things to pray about, or the answers to prayer, is that the Christian ministry is once again thriving. And there was just, it seemed like, a tremendous openness in much of the country where we were moving to the gospel message. Listen carefully, especially as this relates to the work that we are trying to do there. Obstacles facing the church include B, lack of biblical teaching. The church is often characterized by scriptural ignorance and materialism. As chaos seized the nation, established churches dissolved. Point C, leadership development is a great need. Trained spiritual leaders are few. Many leaders had to flee or were killed. Most Bible training was brought to a halt, etc., etc., etc. Ministry to young people and children is probably the most strategic issue in Liberia. Nearly half of the nation is under 15 years old. This whole generation has been deeply traumatized and robbed of its family life, its chance for normalcy, its very innocence. Over 50,000 children were killed in the fighting. Pray for churches and agencies seeking to minister in this difficult context. Another area of special need is the former child soldiers. The 15,000 who survived have little chance of a normal life. Memories of the atrocities they witnessed, endured, and committed haunt them. Over 30% have already attempted suicide at least once. As terrible as their past experiences were, the prejudice and stigma they face in post-war Liberia is nearly as bad. Talks about the fatherless children from peacekeeping forces, those kinds of things. There was tremendous victims of sexual abuse, those kinds of things. But I think you get the idea. Talks again about the effect of Christian radio. That's going to be enough just to get us some introduction there. I was impressed with the openness that we felt in both Liberia and Nigeria to gospel teaching. We could make an announcement, put an announcement in the Hutch News and say, we're going to have a pastor's conference in Hutchinson, Kansas. And we invite all the pastors from miles around to come for this conference. And we could maybe rent the convention hall or the sports arena. And I don't know, but I would guess there's going would be maybe a handful, maybe 5 or 10 pastors that might come just kind of out of curiosity. I don't know. Don't know what to expect, really. But I don't expect that a lot of people would come just thinking, you know, I'm going to really encounter something here that's going to be life-changing and it's going to impact my church. In these countries, it was similar to what we experienced when we were in Nicaragua. There was a lot of openness to teaching, and it was exciting to teach in those kinds of situations where people were open and were receptive. And I see that, in fact, as an open door, if you please. However, that same openness that they have to our teaching can translate into an openness into any kind of teaching, and they may be open to the JWs, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Mormons, the Tulsa crowd, and whatever. And in a sense, I think that the church in these developing countries is maybe for sale to the highest bidder. And that's a little bit scary. But I think that we have a chance in this time of freedom, in time of hunger, to weigh into that equation and hopefully help in some of this church development as it goes. There's a dearth of sound teaching. In Nigeria, we were given 2 or 3 books by people that were in attendance there, and they were very much along the lines of what Operation World was talking about, the prosperity, the kind of dubious name it and claim it, those kinds of things. I had a man that was tremendously blessed by my teaching, and he brought a manuscript of his book, and he gave it to me, and he wanted me to review this manuscript. And by the way, I would like for you to write the introduction or the whatever you call it there at the front of the book. And as I reviewed his book, it became apparent pretty quickly several things that we were on somewhat different pages of theologically. And I kind of graciously bowed out of the assignment. I didn't really feel like I was qualified to talk on the areas of grammar and whatever, what's acceptable in Nigeria. And I think pointed out a little bit where we, might have some differing views, whatever. But that is my impression that how they described it in Operation World is very much what we were seeing on the ground. In Liberia, there was 3 groups that were seeking some kind of alignment with us. Would we consider adopting somewhat of a mother church role? One group was, I think, a group of 30 churches. Two of them, in fact, were groups of about 30 churches. The third situation, it wasn't exactly like that. It was someone who had been involved in teaching in a Bible school. Would there be a chance that we could come and help kind of wrap up if he would do a teaching session of several weeks or whatever, and we could come for a weekend and kind of do a wrap-up session and that we would complement each other that way? Well, as they came with those kinds of questions or that kind of interest, my German Kansas Miller mind was immediately kind of, hey, what all are you talking about here? And so I graciously tried to ask, what kind of things would you think this would involve or whatever? And basically, It was like, we need someone to teach us. We want someone to tell us, like a mother telling us how to, and it was basically in the line of teaching and whatever. I don't know what would happen if we would go on with a relationship, but an interesting perspective anyway. The multiplication factor, my goal as a teacher is not to be a pastor for the people. My goal is not necessarily even to teach in the individual congregations, but if we can meet with a whole group of pastors, that multiplication factor, we can theoretically impact hundreds and hundreds of people in many, many different churches through that means. And I think that's good practice and good theology to let those people do it on their level where they can. They're unreached people, both in Liberia and Nigeria. Like I referred to those of you who are studying in the perspectives classes, it's obvious that we can't go to all these places, but if we can help equip and empower people that can go, in a sense, we are working to that end. In Nigeria, there was much appreciation for the teaching. There was interest in us going to other areas. Could you come to our state? Could you come and teach here? What are the possibilities? And, oh, if we would have only videotaped the teaching, and then it could have been passed around, those kinds of things. One of the participants there in Nigeria came to me and he said something like this. We have this custom in Nigeria. When someone blesses us, we want to bless them back. And he was wanting to give me a very special blessing. He had this nice package, and inside this package was this elaborate Nigerian outfit. And I was a little mixed up because I thought maybe it was something that he had spent the night making. And he said something like this, no, this was from my collection or whatever. And he kind of mentioned it's rather an expensive outfit. So I really appreciated his sentiments. I haven't quite got brave enough to wear it to the sale barn here in South Hutch yet. But anyway, if some of you want to try on some of these clothes afterward, I'll let you do that. I don't get them worn very often. A major part of our teaching in Liberia, Philip Beiler was there with me, was the question and answer sessions following the classes. And Phil said about that, he thinks they are going to remember that as much as they are the teaching or something like that. Let me just give a sampling of some of the questions that they ask. Is it okay for a pastor to use alcohol? What do we do with a person who was given a responsibility in the church and has now become irresponsible? Are we under grace or the law? How should a pastor deal with a rebellious son? How should we discipline our children with the reality of child rights hindering us? Is it right to make alcohol to sell? And I gathered on some of these questions there was some tension in the group and possibly among the different ones, maybe some different views on this, and that, you know, if you have a pet subject and you can toss it out to the foreigners, then you can sort of sit back and watch the sparks fly. Did the priest who touched the ark go to hell when he was struck dead? Is Sunday the only day to worship, or is it okay to worship on any day? My husband is difficult to live with, and he won't respond to my appeals. What should I do? Is it right to have a discipline bench in the church? And apparently in one of their traditions, there was a bench that someone could sit on for 3 months or 6 months or whatever till his discipline time had passed. When church members sins, should he confess his sin before the whole church? What should we do when a member of our flock goes to some other pastor for advice and counsel? What should I do about my son who rejects me because I'm his teacher at school? How is the church built on the foundation? How do the gates of hell not prevail against the church? Was it right for David to be allowed to keep Bathsheba as his wife? Etc., etc. There's probably twice that many, but very interesting. I won't tell you how we answered all of them, but it was amazing how it felt like the Holy Spirit was there and you just kind of plowed in, and if it was a particularly contentious question, sometimes we would turn it back to them. Now, what do you think about that? And then they would have to flesh it out, and then you could kind of play off of that and whatever. Let's see. I think we're just about ready for the pictures here. Go ahead and get the first picture up, Hannah. I already mentioned. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, Harold, you can grab the light now, or Matthew. I already mentioned that we were with Heralds of Hope with the first. Yes, Nigeria first. Heralds of Hope for the first presentation, and that was interesting how that came together. Bob Kaufman was aware of some of the work we're doing in India, and about a year ago met with me and possibly David discussing this work in Nigeria. And as the schedules worked out that I was able to stop in there on the way back from India. And it was a fascinating, fascinating trip. I would very much like to give you the details of how it seemed God worked out in almost a miraculous way to bring the team together. Those of you that read my report have that. The southern part of Nigeria, we flew into Benin City. There was a lot of Christian presence there, a lot of signage along the road, that kind of thing. Church of God Mission International, Dare to Believe Conference, that would have been very consistent with their type of theology. Here we were at the conference center. We were in Benin City at the Blessed Bible Believers Fellowship. They had a choir there, mostly girls that sang very energetically and beautifully in their own way. The first evening, I alluded to the fact that how the team came together almost miraculously. I got off the plane in Lagos, was met out front by Pastor Sunday. He handed me a phone and said, "This is Bob." This was Bob Kaufman. And it was Bob Kaufman on the other end saying that, "Lowell, there's been a change of plans. We're not coming." And there was three of us that were scheduled to be speaking. And all at once, this whole session of, 15 different sessions over the weekend, have at it, whatever. And I was just kind of reeling after a long jet flight. And anyway, I'll give just a few details. I said, "Well, call my wife, Judy, and tell her what's happening." And the men that I was with didn't give up. They went and they prayed. Well, Judy, meanwhile, called our daughter Hannah over at Golden Rule. Hannah got on the computer and tried. They had worked furiously. The twice a week flight, their flight was canceled, flying on a Nigerian airline. And Hannah was able, and they were looking to fly out of New York, apparently. One man from Delaware, the other one from Pennsylvania. And Hannah was able to find them something out of Philadelphia that very next night. She said, "How soon could you be in Philadelphia?" And they drove rapidly from both ways to get to Philly. Bob Kaufman and his wife just made it. They were checked in. Richard Schwarzentruber from Delaware was coming from the east, and he came in just with no time to spare, basically. Jumped out, flew up to the desk, and the lady says, "No, that flight has already closed." And he was really frustrated. "Well, I've been trying for the last 2 days to get to Nigeria, and I think the Lord wants me there," something like that. Meanwhile, Bob is back at the gate, and they're about finished. I don't know if they were about finished boarding, but it was getting very close, and no Richard. He called Hannah and was talking to her on the phone. "What do we do? Richard hasn't come. Do we cancel his ticket? What do we do?" And Hannah says, from this end, all at once, she heard laughing and crying and praying all about the same time, and Richard had arrived. They made it then, one day late, basically. Their luggage came at some point a little later than that, actually. But that was a great consolation to me to hear those brethren say, well, the next morning when I got up there at the Bible Society in Lagos and said, well, they're coming. And they had been praying, and they were coming. This is the group there at the conference. Around 80 in attendance at the higher, in the training sessions. I think this was that first evening then. Richard was scheduled to be the evangelist. He wasn't there yet, and I had that first evening's session. The situation is fairly volatile in Nigeria, and I understand the government requires armed protection, and those men met us there at the airport and were basically around us for the duration of our time there. Very interesting. By the time we left, it was almost like we were friends, and they had heard the gospel I don't know how many times, or heard preaching I don't know how many times. They had this tradition of ushers that stood up in front of the congregation on each side. I don't know for sure what their function was, but some of them could hold a position like the guards at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. This was Pastor David, a man who we got to know and in many ways appreciated. Some of our food. Here was then when Bobkoff and his wife Donna and Richard Schwarzentruber came breezing in the basically one morning late back there. Here's Bob Kaufman teaching. Many of you remember him from having been here with used to be Northern Youth Programs, I think, and now with Heralds of Hope. Richard Schwarzentruber from Greenwood, Delaware. We also had some Q&As with the pastors there. This man had a lot of questions. It was very fascinating. You go by what they hear and what they listen to. It was interesting hearing him preach back almost what you had taught before, and he was rehearsing it back. And this, I think, probably is a tradition of an oral culture, and it kind of excites me as I think of the implications of training in an oral culture. There's a school just outside that on that same compound. This is probably a man asking a question. This is Pastor Sunday, the man who we dealt with, this tall guy on the left. The choir, they had soloists leading out. Richard teaching. Richard getting a young boy to read scriptures. Very hot and humid. This is the pastor's wife and a little girl. Remember the story of this girl? I forget what her name is. One of the cases of this maternal mortality. When Bob's were there about a year earlier, this mother had just recently died in childbirth, and this is the young, beautiful young child. Donna teaching the women. We didn't know the president was going to be there. But maybe with a conference like this, we can get things squared away. This is a father of that precious little child, this man who lost his wife a little over a year before. We had a time of prayer there with him. They were big on gifting us with these outfits, and I'm wearing one of them tonight, the same one there. Pastor Sunday again. Toward the conclusion of the conference, each one of the participants basically met with one of us, shared some of their goals or visions, and had a prayer time together. Fortunately, there was someone there that was kind of timing them and keeping them on their toes for not spending too much time. I think these were the men from the other state that were requesting that we might come to give teaching where they were. Then they wanted pictures with the strangers. Oh, there's the father and that little child. Was there in the Sunday morning service in Pastor Sunday's church, and he comes and taps me on the shoulder or whatever. We're going to Pastor David's church. Okay, so we walk to Pastor David's church. There's a little huddle up there with him, and then he comes back. He wants you to speak. Okay, this was nice to know. But this was his church. Those headdresses on the women are very interesting. And they covered significantly during the week as well, it looked like. picture with the children. This was now at the airport as we're about to leave our new friends. This I took off of a worship center or a church building, whatever, but I really think it could be adopted as our goal. To raise a people of integrity, purpose, excellence, and power with passion for Jesus and addiction for God's kingdom. Heralds of Hope sends a lot of literature over there. This was the Bright Compassion Center that distributes some of their literature. We did a brief tour there of that facility. Okay, move me over to Liberia. This Liberia was now in March, just a couple months ago. This contact was through a Paul Hirschberger, who has founded a work called Sharing God's Abundance. He went over to help build the warehouse facility for CAM. That's Paul right there. He's actually, Elmer's, you would probably know him. He's Jake Hirschberger's grandson. I forget, who is it? Henry, his dad? Henry's his dad, was from South Carolina originally. He's been back many times since then, has a vision to get into the off back roads. This was the Sunday after we had landed there and met with six of the local people. There's Philip Byler and his son Japheth who were there. Here's some of the literature that Paul has that he distributes across the country, a lot of Bibles, a lot of things. Here we were loading the vehicles. There's his logo, and Japheth is putting the magnetic sign on the side of the vehicle. A lot of rubber trees still in Liberia. Firestone, if you see it there, was a major presence apparently in the country. We went to a store on the Firestone property apparently to pick up some supplies. Interesting seeing the American type supplies there. Those of you with Pennsylvania connections, there's the Turkey Hill ice cream looks like. Potatoes, things were not cheap. This was basically $1 a pound, and that was U.S. prices. Water was a necessity for us foreigners to drink pure water. Vehicles tended to be well loaded. Infrastructure is almost non-existent in the country. I think there was grid electricity in the capital, Monrovia. In Buchanan, which I understood was the second largest city, I don't think there was any grid electricity at all. So what do you do when you need gasoline? We saw a lot of these gas stations where the gas was sold by the gallon. You see the gallons there and the gas? Children, 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 a lot of adorable children crowding around your vehicle when you stopped. This was setting up to show the Jesus film. A major part of Paul's ministry is showing the Jesus film for maybe 300 to 1,000 people will show up in a village and will watch the Jesus film, and often there are significant responses to the gospel call. I think his count is possibly over 7,000 people that have responded to Christ's call through this medium. This was the first village back in. Paul had gotten some battery fans, which made life very much more bearable. When there's no electricity, you're cooped up in small houses, occasionally with mosquito nets. It just, humidity during the day tends to be very high, as well as the heat, maybe both in the 90s, I don't know for sure, but very warm. And those fans really made life more bearable. Here was where I spent the first night. I was apart from the others. There was a little shower house in the village. The morning after, then we did some teaching, especially with the people who had responded the evening before at the Jesus film. There was our interpreter. This was an interesting feature of the Liberian church. You notice that grim-looking lady with a stick. She was to maintain order in the church. And so, guys, if you get to whispering here on the front bench, don't be surprised if you get a pretty good thwop from from somewhere, or maybe you will get relocated up to a place where you're under more observation. She really played the part well. She just looked very grim and did her work well. These were, I think, the young men that had responded the night before. Here was our interpreter, Robert. He was a wonderful interpreter to work with. He was, in fact, the one who had been involved in the Bible school that has been shuttered. I was wondering, is there any way we could work together with that? There's the switch lady again. That would be very typical. They have their hands free with a baby strapped on their back and a load strapped on their head. Food was not anything that I'm going to get real excited about trying to have my wife cook here. They had rice. They apparently raised their own rice. Subsistence living. Most of the country probably is existing on less than a dollar a day. Just kind of a dry, unimaginative rice, but they often would serve us some kind of a gravy or whatever. Here, Paul doesn't look too impressed with what it was. I think this actually had some chicken meat in it. Cooking done on fires like this. There they gave a gift of a chicken. There's quite a bit of slash and burn agriculture. Looking out the window, there's an area that's probably ready to be burned off. Heading to the place where we're going to have the first conference, the clouds are really rolling in. It looked like we might be getting into some rain, which in fact we did. That was the road. These were the boys that were enjoying it. Children. Here we are back at the village now, right there. And around 2 o'clock, I think, we started with the first conference in this first village. This was the largest group, probably between 300 and 400 people there. Had some fascinating singing, worship. We just had a really good time there. This was in Riversess County. There are different distinct languages in the country. This would have been the Bassa language. We were interpreted mostly with Robert. Not everybody made it inside the building. The ladies had this thing they went through in their song. It was very interesting. Bunch of people outside the back. Illustration I used on the building. I taught on the church using several of the word pictures from the Bible. The church is a body and the church is a building. It's actually two sessions out of a series of five. But with the way our time was arranged, basically I took two or three sessions for each topic and basically repeated. This last picture gives you an idea of how warm it was. And that afternoon, it wasn't just my shirt that was wet, but my legs had sweat running down them, and it was very, very warm. I had noticed this bang outside the building during the session that day, and at the end, they were really happy. They made some kind of a presentation and maybe a letter of appreciation, I don't know what all. And then there was a commotion by the side door, and they were dragging this goat in. This goat was a present for the visitors that had blessed them. So the goat appreciated it probably less than some of the other participants. They were going to start out by giving us shirts, but after the first session or two decided this wouldn't be sufficient, and they pulled out their sops, which really, it was a very significant sacrifice on their part to come up with that kind of money to buy us a young goat. That may have been the appreciation letter. Here's Philip with his get-up. Here's the goat. At one point, I think it escaped its tether and became a scapegoat briefly. We were trying to think, how can we work this thing out? We wanted to graciously receive it and accept it as a gift, and decided we found that someone would butcher it for us yet that very night. We weren't going to be leaving till the next morning. They put some of the meat on, and actually were able to get some of it there for supper yet fairly late when we waited. And when it was the organ meats, and it had been a young Billy, I ate more probably for obligation than for just pure delight. They had beautiful pineapple there. Someone gave me a pineapple. It was market day there on the day we were leaving. This village or this town was called Bojeezy, I believe, in Riverses County. Very tropical. Hey, time to fuel up. Oh, Dwight, I put that picture in there for you. Have you ever heard of the weaver birds? There we go. This is down to by Buchanan, a town along the coast. Cute little boys passing the time with their homemade boats. Next morning, we were searching for somebody that could fry us some eggs and have an egg sandwich. And finally, I think it was probably a half-hour search around town until we discovered it. And it's a good way to start the day. Heading out to the next place. They have some iron ore, and presumably that's where that train is going back to the iron ore place. Oh, can any of you read through that paint there? Maybe this is a little better. Virginia Beach City Public Schools. A bus way back there in the middle of nowhere, and I think that this Paul Hershberger had been born in Virginia Beach, and so I took a picture of that. Oh, the roads weren't all equally interstate. But they were agreeable to certain creatures. A village we were at for the night showed the Jesus film. We had a guide that took us around town showing us some of the damage or the effects from the war and telling us stories. I think there was like 300 people that had been killed there. I think basically soldiers that came in, and the next morning they went and dragged bodies to the woods and took arms and, weapons and good clothes, that kind of thing. This was the Jesus film set up there in that village. That may be the people who had responded up front there with their arms, their hands raised. This was food here. You notice the chicken feet there. Look kind of human, but anyway, it wasn't. Had a service there then the next morning. I think these were part of the group that had responded, and different ones gave their testimony. I put this picture in here for you ladies, or partly. Look at those cornrows. If you think you have a time of braiding your children, getting them ready for school, how would you like to do that? Some pretty ambitious names of businesses. Divine Favor Tire Shop. This is now at the pastor's conference in that area. This was very fortunate. We asked about teaching. There would have been two possibilities, the Pele language or the Mono language, I think. And there was enough interest and enough ability in English. We were able to teach in English without an interpreter, and that was a real blessing. We had some very good times here at this place. Illustration I used about the church working together and somebody working against the church. They fairly often used like sweet potato greens for the vegetables. Oh, a lot of hard work in thrashing out the rice in these mortar and pestles, I guess. I took that stick and ran it a little. This is the village I'll remember for how the children gathered around. They just crowded around like the Pied Piper. Beautiful young children. You'd look down, they'd be holding your hands there. Paul often did a literature distribution with the pastors who were in attendance. This man here in the red University of Massachusetts t-shirt, his name was Charles Miller, and he gave his personal testimony of an interaction that him and his wife had and some hard words and how the children reacted and what they needed to do to work things out and to move forward. You can see he's emotional there, almost crying, but he preached a sermon there that was just in his personal testimony that was a tremendous affirmation to the teaching that we were trying to give her, especially Philip's topic. I had used some shades for an illustration, and I don't know if this little fellow looked in the window and saw it or what, but he was sitting there with his sunglasses on, so I went and sat beside him, and we had a nice time. They use palm nut oil for their cooking a lot. Here was people, workers coming back from the field, apparently with rice ready to be thrashed. They have some fair-sized millipedes there. Mangoes were coming along, but just not quite in season yet there. I thought this was interesting, some of the stickers on a store door in town, and I assumed that these were issues that they were dealing with as a country. This was the man that had given us the tour around the town. We met him in the next village several days later, in a bigger town. It's interesting. Here was Arnold giving Philip a high five. I don't know. I sometimes have complexes about my nose, but I don't think I hold a candle to this African hornbill. Here were some guys that had walked, it seems to me, 3-4 days to come to the one conference. Early morning. Ground rules, put all phones on silent during session, I think. No wearing of neck chains, bracelets, cover heads, veils. No moving in and out during service. That wasn't kept too well. To avoid embarrassment, please send in your church listing. I don't know. This was the final conference. We struggled some with the interpreter here. There was a man, this was one of the leaders in one of the church groups who was asking about possibly coordinating. Seemed like a very fine man. His name is Sumo. What's his first name? Anyway, I got an email from him today, actually. There he is again. This was the cooking for the event. This was in Bong County. This is now at Lamp and Light headquarters. Paul, you were probably there. There's Judy Wagler, Tom Wagler's wife. This is Liberia map. This was Red Light, a major shopping area in the capital, Monrovia, or adjacent. Did some souvenir shopping. I had a feeling I didn't want to buy any of this. There was a music group there. Beautiful coastline. Just the last thing before we did the final cleanup and rushed to the airport was down at the coast for a little bit. It felt kind of incongruous that in 24 hours or whatever I would be back in cold Kansas. But anyway, Christian Aid Ministries warehouse. Now we're back at the start. Could I have the lights, please? Okay, there are several things that makes this type of work seem urgent or seem timely at least. One is the fields are white into harvest. Time to get out the combines, okay? The situation in Liberia especially is very similar to the situation we had when we lived in Nicaragua at first. Technology had made little inroads. There wasn't a lot of television, electricity with the diversions and that kind of thing. Relatively unspoiled territory in a way by the mass media. I'm convinced that the prince of the power of the air, and I don't know if that was intentionally worded that way in Holy Scripture, is used, I mean, the prince of the power of the air uses the mass media to influence people significantly, and there's open doors when there is we don't have all of that competition. By entering the game now in these countries, we have a chance to weigh in on the development of that church as it grows and changes. You know, a dynamic church that is founded on the foundation of Jesus Christ will stand triumphant in that final day. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. So how can you be involved? You can be involved with prayer, finances, maybe going yourself. There's a lot of opportunities. It takes a lot of these different components to make a successful trip. And I feel it's a part of the ownership of the local congregation here. And whereas I may have had the opportunity to be over kind of on the front end of the lightning bolt, it's not like it was like it's my work. I think it's our work. Questions, quickly. We're a little past 9 already. Anyone have any questions? Paul. Yeah. I don't know that. Our experience in Nigeria, we basically went into Benin City. We were basically under armed guard for the entire time we were there. And we felt kind of stifled because we'd have liked to go out and walk and take some evening air. With some of the news I've been reading since I'm back, I realized that they were looking out for our own protection. And they were watching out for us. So I don't have a good handle on that. Liberia, we drove hours and hours and hours. I don't know if we spent 30 hours, 40, I don't know what, how many hours we spent on the road bouncing around all over that country. And it felt like, I mean, I enjoyed that. It gave us a different perspective. But even then, there's distinct people groups, different counties have different languages and whatever. That report from Operation World said, I think, was 250 people groups, or in 250 ethnic groups in Nigeria. But Nigeria, we're talking about, you know, more than half as many people as the U.S. Who else? I don't know that we got into that. I know that some of the rebellion came from some of these I think maybe the Mono or the, I forget which. I mean, I'm not that familiar with it, but that there was some instigation of rebellion from certain sectors. But where that is now and what the situation, I can't say. Nathan? We are basically waiting to see what develops, but I think we could have kept driving in Liberia and in Nigeria for the foreseeable future and met receptive groups and whatever. But all of that takes ownership and funding and opportunities and et cetera. Anyone else? I have written a trip report of the last trip, the Liberia trip, and I'm very self-conscious. It's 4 pages. I don't want to put things in your mailbox that you're not interested in. I would be able to run off a bunch. If there's some of you that are interested, I'd try to make that many copies and see that you could get them. We just put them on the back table and keep replacing them when they run out. Maybe 1, 2, 3. We'll probably put 20 or 25 copies back there. I might even get one of the ushers to help me do that. But then if they're out, maybe I'll make a note on the last one to leave it. I'm not trying to burden you with something, but I want to share with those who are interested. I'm actually kind of excited about this work. Danny, I think that's it. Thank you for your patience and listening well.
64.